This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details. Tom Latcham on FUBAR Radio.
Ground control to Major Tim. UK astronaut Tim Peake is ready to make his landmark flight to the International Space Station. In pretty much 1 hour from now, the ex-helicopter pilot will become the first official UK astronaut when he launches on a Russian Soyuz rocket from Kazakhstan. And once on the ISS, he will conduct experiments, carry out educational activities designed to get young people interested in science, and do 2 hours of exercise a day to inspire kids to keep fit. 2 hours of exercise a day? Chance to be a fine thing. Some of us got to work, mate. I mean, not me, obviously, all my two co-presenters, but anyway. He says he's most looking forward to the amazing view of Earth. But surely once you've seen it once, it'll get pretty boring, right? And being away for 6 months, Tim will miss spending Christmas with his family. Plus the final of Strictly Come Dancing. And yet another repeat of Mrs. Brown's Boys on BBC One. How are you going to cope, Tim? He will also, believe it or not be able to pick up FUBAR Radio. So thank God you're not with him. And sit tight while we blast off with this, our last show before Christmas, with my co-hosts for the day, comedians Leo Kurse and Tony Marese, neither of whom are in particularly good shape, good enough shape, certainly, to be going on a space exploration mission. How are you, gents?
I'm in much better shape than you. I'd probably be lighter to take into orbit as well.
Well, you know what they say, don't you? People fat like me, fat people like me, can only lose weight in space.
So maybe Tony, you and I, really, they're sending the wrong person into space, Tony. They should be sending, like, you and I. In fact, maybe this is the way of tackling the obesity problem.
Put them into orbit.
Just send all the fatties in a rocket. I don't know if it'd take off. That's the problem. I
mean,
then rockets are strong, but I don't know how strong, Tony. How are you anyway, boys?
Good, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, thanks.
Yeah. For some reason, Leo's mic isn't working. I don't know, that's probably a good thing or not, but we'll see. Maybe he's just not talking into it properly. Anyway, what I want to know is, from you guys, with Tim Peake heading into space today, if you could take one thing to space, what would it be? Tom at FUBARradio.com, tweet us at FUBARradio, or call us on 0330-223-0200. That number again, 0330-223-0200. We worked out why Leo couldn't speak, and it was because I hadn't put his mic on. So,
deliberate.
Thank God we're not on the ISS. That's all I'll say. If I can't manage to have to put a microphone on, then I suspect that ISS would be crashing, careering down to Earth.
If anybody's listening from central London, then Euston, we had a problem.
Very good, Leo. Leo, of course, the pun king.
Yeah.
Still?
I'm a pumpkin. I am a butternut squash. I am any sort of leguminous vegetable.
Pun king. Are you the reigning? Are you still the reigning pun champion?
My mate said he's going to sit in my pumpkin. He butternut squash it.
That's how you elbow material in. Every time you do that, I'm going to say that.
Yeah, we should get.
Sorry for having material. I don't just waffle.
We should probably try and find some sort of sound effect, on the internet that we could do whenever Leo does one of his really shit puns. There you go, Leo's doing his own sound effects.
What about the sound of bones being crushed?
I don't think that'll be a sound effect if he carries on doing too many of those dreadful puns.
That takes us on to our story about the man who wants to live as a 6-year-old.
Look, we'll be talking about that later. There's a fully fledged old man who wants to live as a 6-year-old.
Yeah, definitely a grown man.
He's a grown man. Anyway, right, coming up on the show later on as well, obviously we're going over the papers, as we've been saying, all through the big stories that have been making the papers today and will probably be tomorrow's fish and chip paper. We'll be talking to Russ Kane, who's a former colleague of Neil Fox, who was yesterday cleared of sexually assaulting women and girls as young as 14. We'll be chatting to a friend of the show, Gemma Oton, who is the face of a new Tinder scheme to help donate organs, because no organs have ever been donated via Tinder before. Where's the noise? Where's the sound effect? Wah, wah, wah. Thank you. It's not just Leo that can come up with shit gags. Hey, we can all do that, Tony.
Apparently they've got Tinder for organs now. You can search for a heart, a liver, kidney.
Yeah. And Gemma Oton, who's a friend of the show, she's the face of that, so we'll be talking to her later. And a look back at a rather pitiful X Factor final, both in terms of production and ratings, with my former co-host Selena Watts from the Daily Mirror. We also review the weekend's big night of boxing with our resident pundit Steve Lillis, plus plenty more from myself, Leo and Tony Marese, who it's Tony's debut, so do we think he's going to... What do you reckon, Leo? You recommended him. Do you think he's going to live up to
your podcast together?
Did you?
Yeah. Mm.
Then Leo just didn't want to do it anymore.
I still want to do it, Tony. I still want to do it.
You can talk about this later, guys. I mean, you know, they don't need to know your internals.
I don't like you.
The problem. What was the podcast?
It was called The Mothership. Tony chose that name. I wasn't keen. But, it's good. We just talked about anything, like the state of the UK comedy industry, conspiracy theories, sometimes both of them overlapping.
Hmm.
Yeah, good fun.
Yeah.
People liked it. That's why we gave it up. Yeah. Why give people what they want when you can give them nothing at all?
It's true. Or Mrs. Brown's boys. Well, so conspiracy theories. Did you do the moon landing, seeing as we're on a sort of astronomical theme?
It's not going to be a mainstream story, but it's all over the internet about Stanley Kubrick. There's supposed to be this interview with Stanley Kubrick confessing that he filmed the moon landings, but it's fake. It's a load of nonsense.
What, Stanley Kubrick didn't film the moon landings?
No, that interview is fake. That interview is being kind of poo-pooed. It's not Stanley Kubrick. It's all really bad lighting and like bad angles, and it's just nonsense. Yeah. But
do you think people have landed on the moon?
Yeah.
That's that then.
I mean, probably not, to be honest.
There's stuff up there that you can see from Earth that we left there. Like, we've got a laser reflector.
We're always littering, aren't we?
Bones. There's a cool full cortina up there. That's when the first geezer from Hackney got.
I want it back.
Do you know something? Better that we don't go anywhere else, to be honest. Let's face it, we ruin everything.
Yes.
Just stay here, ruin it here, let the moon be.
Well, there was a guy, so this morning on another radio station, they were doing a phone-in about this space landing, and they were all being, you know, chattering excitedly. We had David Willetts, the former science minister there over in Kazakhstan, talking to him all, you know, the former head of the astronautical whatever society, you know, all going, this is fantastic, fantastic. Old Dave from I don't know, Redbridge or something's ringing, and he's going, you can't breathe. I think there's no point. There's no point. I don't know why you're going. There's kids starving in Africa. There's no point in going up there. So, well, I'm not saying it's a waste of money and time, but I mean, I kind of am saying it's a waste of time and money when there's kids starving in Africa.
You still have got to get on there. The thing is, though, if they had got to the moon, I'm not being funny, it's been quite a few years, isn't it? We would already have had a Costa up there. It would have been a Starbucks. It would have been a Mackie D's. It would have been high streets. There would have been, you know, people selling stuff. Yeah. State agents, this piece of rock here. Amazing.
Charming piece of rock.
It's got a great view.
It's very true. Right, let's play a song and then we'll come back and we'll do the front pages. How does that sound? And by the way, I do apologise. This is producer Will's suggestion, but they're largely Christmas songs related today because it is our last. We all like Christmas songs. Who doesn't like Christmas songs, right?
I like Christmas songs.
There you go. Are you going to... No? Well, they're going to crowbar in some of your...
Christmas some of your jokes.
Dreadful material there. Well, sorry, I was waiting for you. Like, it's the one time I've actually waited for you and you haven't crowbarred in yet.
I was walking past the Christmas tree this morning and I looked up and the little figurine lifted up her skirt and I was like, fairy muff.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. With the kids jingle belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year. It's the happiest season of all. With those holiday greetings and gay happy meetings when friends come to call. It's the season of all. There'll be parties for hosting, marshmallows for toasting, and caroling out in the snow. There'll be scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of Christmases long, long ago. It's the most wonderful time of the year. There'll be much mistletoeing and hearts will be glowing when loved ones are near. It's the most wonderful time of the scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of Christmases long, long ago. It's the most wonderful time of the year. There'll be much mistletoeing and hearts will be glowing when loved ones are near. It's the most wonderful time.
Yes, the most wonderful time. Oh, the most wonderful time of the year.
Boom. And that's Christmas. So, yeah, this is Tom Latch. I'm Dr. Fox. It's Magic FM, and I'm back. No, I'm not really. I'm not really Dr. Fox, but he will be back maybe soon. You know, who knows? Yeah. It's 10:15. It's Fubar Radio. I'm here with Tony Morese and Leo Kurz, my co-presenters for the day. Both comedians, they say.
Of sorts.
They both stand in front of audiences with microphones. I think that's. Yeah.
Hopefully, there's an audience.
sometimes there's not.
Sometimes you even get paid.
Wow. You guys have been looking over the front pages and on all the papers today. So, let's not start with the hectic sun splash, which is about a rat eating an old lady. Let's look at the Guardian, because that one's something that we've all got something to chip in with. Tony, what does it say? The Guardian splash
the
today.
The Guardian is MPs and city chiefs turn on Sports Direct. Sports Direct getting a bit of a bad rep, isn't it, Leo?
Yes, it is.
What's it getting a bad rep for?
Low pay.
They're apparently been paying
employees on the way out.
They're paying under the minimum wage.
No, they're not. They're not paying under the minimum wage.
Yeah, they're paying under the minimum wage.
They are paying under the minimum wage.
They're paying
people with old football socks. See, the funny thing is, I've got a good. You know, I buy Sports Direct stuff, but from the car boot sale. I don't know where it comes from. But often there's this bloke down the car boot sale off White Hart Lane, and he's got like about half a ton of football boots, shin pads.
Well, he's the guy who's like nicking it. That's why they've been searching,
but he obviously didn't work there because they do search people. And like, there was part of this Guardian investigation into Sports Direct was. One of the sort of sensational claims was that they searched people on the way out. Well, I worked there when it was sports soccer back in 2002,
yeah.
And they used to search people there as well. Because
it's a normal thing, though. Yeah, because if you searched like working in a hotel,
yeah, because if you didn't, you'd just like you know wear like three pairs of trackies out the door.
Yeah.
I used to stuff my
not that I would
ship alarms. They'll never find them down here.
You sound like are you addicted to heroin?
I have been.
I mean, that's the sort of thing that heroin addicts do. Load up on meat.
Going back to your car boot sale, how much was the guy selling it for? Because in Sports Direct, it costs like £1.50. So, like, how much are you saving?
A load. Shin pads.
Good quality Adidas shin pads.
Oh, really?
Sondico that he bought. I don't know where he found that brand. But you know, this has always kind of been a bone of contention. They are a bit sneaky, Sports Direct, I think. Because when you buy something in there, I went and bought a football for my boy. And they then offer you this giant bag for like several lifetimes, and it's only 80p, but it's just basically a massive billboard of Sports Direct, and you've got to walk around and look like a knobhead. Yeah. This giant bag. I said to him, you want me to pay to advertise your shop and make me look like a knobhead? So I bought two. I think that kind of sums up what they're like. They are a bit kind of like that, aren't they? They're a bit kind of shifty.
So today, the story on the front, it's a follow-up really from their investigation, which I think was on Saturday. It says, Chuck Arumana, the former business minister, has branded the retailer a bad advert for British business, which has a culture of fear in the workplace, which we'd not like to see repeated elsewhere. Mm. At the same time, City hedge fund boss Crispin Odie, a leading Sports Direct investor who previously called the retailer's founder Mike Ashley a genius, he said Ashley was difficult to house train. I don't know, he was shitting around the headquarters.
Yeah.
You can't go in the Sports Direct headquarters because...
Peeing on the tennis racket. Stop it, Ashley! People have got to use them!
Wonder it's so cheap. Mike Ashley's pissed everywhere. but also, apparently, undercover reporters found how thousands of the retailer's warehouse staff, obviously we've said, was subjected to an extraordinary regime of searches and surveillance, while local primary school teachers told how pupils sometimes remained in school while ill and returned home to empty houses as parents working in Sports Direct were too frightened to take time off. It's not all good news for Sports Direct, though. In 4 days, £600 million has been wiped off the value of the company.
Amazing.
Shares have tumbled 16%, and with a 55% stake, the value of Ashley's personal fortune has taken a hit of £330 million.
Ooh. Ouch. She's only worth £90 billion now. That's just what he's made from those bags.
From you.
From me. And there's nowhere else to go though to buy sports gear. You know, if you want to buy something sporty,
if you want to buy a white Lonsdale wife beater, there's literally nowhere else to go.
Also, those massive mugs. They're the only place that does mugs that big.
That big, yeah.
Yeah.
You got a mug that I can fit a football in. Don't I walk off on my football in a mug?
Again, big advertising for Sports Direct.
Isn't there? Because you know, you do one does need to go to a sports shop now and again, even if you're a cyclist or a runner.
Yeah,
you know, you've got to buy something. And they kind of cornered the market now, haven't they?
No, but yeah. I mean, I don't know. Fair play to them. I don't know if that's the correct.
They are quite clever
sentiment.
Well, yeah. Kind of, because there wasn't any kind of sports kind of big brand type organisation around before that, was there?
And at those prices, I mean, I'm sure you could go down like Savile Row and have some like tennis shorts tailor made for you for like, you know, £2,000 or something. But I mean, being able to buy stuff like that for like a few quid, it's brilliant.
Particularly for you, because you're tight as arseholes. Well, I mean, it is true. I mean, it is true. It's not even a joke, that one. That's not even a whack, whack, wow one. That's just true. Talking about another consumer scandal, the front page of the Daily Mirror, Leo. What are we saying?
Exposed the great painkiller scandal. Apparently, this is something. I mean, how stupid would you have to be not to know that? Like, because I mean, Nurofen adverts. It's the same active ingredient. It's ibuprofen as you get in like supermarket brand ibuprofen. But like, apparently, stupid people have been like thinking that because it's got the fancy advert, it's better than supermarket grade ibuprofen.
Says, and because it says it came from Australia. Someone in Australia took them to court or something, or made a complaint, lodged a complaint with the claim that it targets pain fast.
Yeah.
When it doesn't.
It does. It just gets into your bloodstream. Same speed. Yeah.
And it just gets into your bloodstream and it targets it all of your body at the same time.
Yeah.
The liquid ones work quite well. I suppose when you take eight of those in a Valium, I find it does wonders.
They've suckered him in. These adverts work on some people.
Is that why your hair looks like that, Tony? Did you take a load last night?
I'm going for American presidential kind of look here. I'm going for the old, what's his name again? I've forgotten his name.
Donald Trump.
But don't people know that, isn't it? That's when Panadol came out, you could buy paracetamol, like 400 for 50p. Boots. You could still do that. You can like buy thousands of paracetamol, make little kind of dolly houses out of it.
Yeah.
I thought everybody knew that. It's just a brand is more expensive.
Yeah, because you're paying because it comes in a shiny box, and that's pretty much it. That's how branding works.
I've got another angle on the old Nurofen, actually. When I was on, I did a cruise gig and I hurt my ribs falling into a swimming pool.
Shame none of the audience hurt their ribs. Am I right? All right, party team.
All right. Anyway, I went down to see the ship's doctor. It's an American cruise line, and she gave me these 800 milligram ibuprofen, 800 milligram, which is the standard issue in America, and it came out of a vending machine. They had vending machines full of drugs like ibuprofen.
And is that strong? 800
was double the dose we get here. Right. Double the dose we get here.
Although you can get the same dose here by taking two.
Yeah. You can, but it's not recommended. Even for facetious bastards like Leo.
I did my ribs recently as well.
Did it horrible,
man. Yeah, you don't know how central it is to your entire existence. Yeah.
You can't cough. No. You can't fiddle with yourself comfortably. A cat on the lap is like a no-go.
It's really, really painful fiddling myself for the last 2 weeks.
How did you do your ribs in?
This is where I say like cage fighting or something and then admit it was playing hockey.
That's pretty violent though, isn't it?
Yeah, that's
not ice hockey. Just normal hockey, yeah.
That is still quite...
Well, I mean, it is the way I play it.
Was anyone else playing with you?
Just myself.
Just in a room, smashing up a room with a stick.
It's what I say, hockey. What I mean is
vandalism.
I mean, the Mail story. I mean, we'll touch on it very cursorily. It's quite dull. I mean, I don't know why anyone is going to be reading this. It's quite an industry story. This, I don't know why anyone's going to be reading it, but it's basically Britain's top civil servant was savaged yesterday over his plans to restrict the public's right to know in freedom of information requests.
Oh, that's such a boring story. Why did they put that in the front page?
Because the Daily Mail, I have to say, they don't necessarily do exactly what the public would want. They do things that they think are important for the Daily Mail
society.
And for, you know, for the... Yeah, for, well,
I like
for
how civil servants are called mandarins. Top mandarin. That's quite Christmassy.
That is Christmassy. Last night me and my girlfriend. So I told this story last week, but we there's a follow up to it. Last week, November the 28th, my girlfriend put up a Christmas tree. Don't ask me. I mean, that is mental,
have
right?
Have you ever seen so many sad-looking men carrying trees with happy-looking women in your life? All around London, these geezers just carrying trees, thinking, I've just spent 90 quid on this tree.
And I've got weed to decorate.
And I've got a bloody carry out home as well.
And you've got to drag
the things
it
you
back.
Do to, for a blowy. But I basically said, she put up this tree, did it all herself, bless her. But unfortunately, it was cut off, and she didn't put water in, and it died within a week. We had to throw out the Christmas tree
and get another
by about the 6th of December. I'm still finding needles, by the way, all over the front room. Right, so we threw it out, and then on Saturday, I got up secretly and went to buy her another one, and then turned up on the door and knocked on the door and went,
"All right,
yay!"
You didn't try and do the
and she
hamster.
She was like, "You've saved Christmas."
You didn't do the hamster thing of getting a Christmas tree that looked the exact same and just replacing it when they weren't looking.
No, because we'd already chucked it out the window.
All right,
we're on the first floor of a flat, so
right.
So there was basically pine needles across the street, like a bomb had gone off, like a Christmas tree bomb had gone off.
It's funny because you see those trees in certain boroughs; you can see them all the way through, almost to like the end of summer. Still lying there by the bins. Yeah.
Sad
bin men
Christmas
refusing
tree.
To I'm not taking it. I'm not taking it. Till you cut that up and put it in your green waste bin, I am not taking it.
We filmed something in April, and I remember there was that Christmas tree on the pavement, and I picked it up and carried it along. That was there for like 4 months.
One of the most wasteful kind of... you know what that's about? It's a German tradition of keeping winter
what,
at bay.
Refusing to...
To refuse to do your job. We cannot do anything nice, especially then, at Christmas.
Well, so then last night we tried to make some Christmas decorations by chopping up oranges and putting them in the oven on a low heat. They burned and we threw them away. So this Christmas, isn't going. It's not going that
pine
brilliantly.
Pine cones is what you want.
Pine
cones. That's what we've got to use. Because as they open, all the fleas start coming out and blessing your house. That's another
and that would
thing.
Be our luck. Our luck would do that. And finally, again, this is a pretty sad story on the front page of The Sun. Leo, what is it?
Basically, a rat bit... an old woman was in a care home and a rat bit her 50 times. Mm. Really gruesome. It's like that... There's a series of horror books about rats, and it's like something out of that.
Yeah, it's like it's a exactly bad, it's like a nightmare, that. I mean, imagine waking up and having a rat biting you.
Yeah.
And the woman sadly passed away, albeit 3 months later. But you know,
3 months later,
who knows whether that was to do with it.
And just the late response from the NHS and the police. Took 3 months for them to get there. Don't worry, love, we'll be with you in a minute.
It's true. And there's a rat on you. Don't worry about it. You'll be fine. Anyway,
it's horrible, isn't it? It's a horrible dreadful. Thing, and it kind of like I think like the people directly responsible. What we should do to them. Is do the old kind of 1984 cage on the face with a rat in it and say, well, what do you feel now?
Yeah.
Feel
they wouldn't do that again. Wouldn't let that happen again, would they?
Yeah, exactly. Kind of like, that's a very gruesome way to go, and it kind of sad indictment of how old people are treated in this country.
It is indeed. That's a sad ending, but we'll play a Christmas song. That might cheer
but
us up a bit.
Rats can be nice as well. Let's
can
not,
they?
You know, people have got pet rats. Let's not forget that.
Yeah, this wasn't
Christmas.
A pet rat, though.
Unless maybe rat, but they are nice.
That could be the missing part of the story. It was a pet rat and she hadn't been feeding it.
I mean, you've solved it, Leo.
Maybe she'd been mistreating the rat. Now, let's not go down that.
Let's play a Christmas song and then we'll come back and we'll talk some more stories from the papers, not the front pages. None of these are particularly brilliant choices, frankly, but that is we are limited by the fact they're Christmas songs. So this is Chris Rea, driving home for Christmas. It's 10:28 on Fubar Radio.
Great song.
Faces
Ah, Chris Rea there. It does feel a bit like we're on magic, doesn't it? but it's not. It's Football Radio. It's 10:32. I'm here with Tony Morazing and Leo Kirst, my co-presenters for the day. But someone who did work on magic and may well be back there soon is Neil Fox. Yesterday he was cleared of sexually assaulting women and girls as young as 14. And our fellow radio presenter, Russ Kane, worked with Neil Fox for many years at Capital Radio throughout the 80s, 90s and 2000s. And he's been in contact with the DJ since the allegations first arose and since. And he joins us now on the line. Hello, Ross, my friend. How are you?
I'm very good, Tom. Isn't that the worst thing about Christmas? You have to listen to the Christmas song.
Well, you say that, but Tony Morazi was loving Chris Rea.
Really?
Yeah.
I kind of loved it in 1928 when it first came out. Old, just a little bit. The worst thing is when you're in the supermarkets. I'm digressing for a second, only because I know you. But like, when you're in the supermarkets and you talk to people on the checkout, they are going raving mad because it's on a loop.
Yeah,
and they hear the same thing about 72 times a day.
Well, you've got to admit, it's better than diarrhea.
What?
It is, that is well done, Leo. I used to work in a garden centre and they played magic, and I used to go to Happy Hardcore raves, and Happy Hardcore is at one point in Happy Hardcore's history, it was basically just Magic FM tunes sped up and put to a hardcore track, and it was like, I'm sure I heard this last night. Anyway, some more serious matters, I suppose.
Yes,
Russ, so you know, you've known Neil Fox for you know, considerable amount of time. Were you surprised to see these allegations made against Neil?
I was, because as I said on Facebook, and I kept my own counsel until that point, until the verdict was in and Neil was acquitted and found not guilty on every single charge. And you know, people were asking me for the last 14 months, and I wouldn't comment because I don't think that's correct, and these matters are sub judice anyway, I presume. But I was very surprised. I mean, we worked together for close on 20 years, and all of his colleagues, all of them, and I'll come back to that in a second, were astonished, because we never saw anything that would amount to pervy behaviour. I can say that on FUBAR, can't I?
You can, you definitely can, yeah.
Or lecherous behaviour or stuff like that. None of us ever saw that, and we worked with him, you know, very closely. And what was really interesting, Tom, from my perspective, was that the first people to rally round Neil Fox were his female co-workers at Capital, and also, I have to say, at Hart. They were the first ones to come forward. People, you probably know Caroline Faraday, etc., you know, who'd also worked with him, and Caroline co-hosted the Drive Time show with him. And if things were going to happen, it could have happened, but nothing happened. Neil behaved impeccably.
But he did. But Russ, he did admit in court recently, during the court case, of course, that his behaviour had included, and this is a quote, tickling and squeezing. I mean, so you never saw such behaviour going on at Capital Radio?
What, tickling and squeezing?
Yeah, so that's what he said.
I saw fun, but you have to understand something, and this is in no way being an apologist. It's the way that it was. That Capital was, I can't speak for it now because I left in 2004 after 20 years, but Capital was a family. It was a very different era, but we really, really were close, and I'm still close with all the people that I work with. I'm sure in your career you are as well, Tom, but that, you know, we really were a family, and like families, we'd have fun, we'd have our rows, we'd break up, and all the rest of it. But that behaviour was not seen. There was nothing that was crossed the line so that somebody was complaining.
Do you know, I mean, you've been in touch, albeit by text message, throughout this whole court case. How has Neil Fox been coping throughout all of this?
Well, it's been horrible for him. I was... What I did on the text, just to be clear with you, Tom, is that was just sort of sending moral support and letting Neil know, because why else would he? Because he's in this sort of horrible legal bubble, this sort of Damocles hanging over his head for 14 months. There were so many people who said, oh, God, I work with Neil, what a lovely guy. So I was just saying to him, there's a lot of people who are rooting for you, a lot of people who are supporting you. That was it. I didn't know the ins and outs of the case. I didn't know the case in any detail. I certainly didn't know any of the protagonists in the case, so it was hardly for me to comment, because I don't know the circumstances. So that was it. He was under you know, he was making it clear, even though our texts were fairly short because I was a busy guy, I think, you know, he had enough to worry about, that, you know, it was an extraordinary strain, not just on him, not just on him professionally, personally, and of course, it affects the whole family, his wife Vicky, and the kids, who are totally old enough to understand what's going on. I mean, this was main news on BBC Radio 4 on their main bulletins, so it was taken very seriously, and it was a very high-profile case, even though it was a magistrate's court.
And do you think that, given the not guilty verdicts, Neil will feel vindicated or angry or both? Or what do you think Neil will
be
feeling?
He said something very interesting on the court steps, if you listen to the sort of subtext, that things have been said, I'm paraphrasing what he said, so forgive me, but things have been said that will need to be looked at and investigated. And I'm sure that if people had slandered him or libeled him more likely, then he might well take action on that. On the other hand, when you've been through something as ghastly as this, one of the main human emotions is to say, oh God, this is over, and just draw a line under it and try and get on with your life, and if you can, forget the whole thing and have nothing more to do with it. I'm sure he will feel, you know, vindicating is not the right word. You come out of it, I would imagine, it's such a ghastly thing that you would come out of it feeling absolutely wrecked and exhausted and rinsed, frankly. So I don't think the word vindicated, but I understand what you're saying with that. Angry, possibly. I mean, I would be, but there you go, that's me.
And do you believe that, I mean, we've seen Paul Gambaccini came out and said it yesterday, yes. Do you believe that there is a witch hunt in terms of celebrity sex cases?
This is only my personal view. This is not based on anything. This is just me speaking as I see it. I feel that they've missed the true monsters, the Jimmy Savills, who everybody had heard the most appalling things about and nothing was done. You know, from when I was a kid, when I was starting off, you know, I heard peculiar things. What are you going to do when you're a kid? Who's going to believe you? Gambo was dreadful. Another very nice man that I worked with at Capital, and a charming man too. They missed or covered up, who knows, true monsters like Cyril Smith, people in real authority, people who were terrifying. And I think they thought, right, well, we better do something. As I said, this is just my view. Right, but we've missed these people. Let's try and play catch-up and get everybody else. However, to be absolutely fair, they have caught some people who totally deserved to be put on trial. And undoubtedly, the verdicts were, in their cases, justified. So the trouble is, it's like a bit of a shotgun approach, Tom, don't you think? That, you know, they're sort of going for everybody. They'll hit some true targets, and they'll also hit some people who really, what a terrible waste of money, time, and emotion.
And finally, before we let you go, Russ, and thanks for joining us,
how soon
do you think Neil, if at all, will be back at work? And do you think that, obviously, he was suspended by Magic at the time when he was arrested. Yes. He was arrested 30 minutes after a show. How soon do you think that Neil will be back at work, and will you think it potentially, hopefully, be at Magic?
I can't speak for Magic, management. They weigh these things up. If I were in management in a major London radio station, I would have him back tomorrow morning. The reason being that he has been found not guilty on every single charge. And what is very clear is there has been, I mean, I've never had such a reaction. I put a very sort of bland message up on my Facebook page, and in all my years of social media, at the moment, it's over 400 people have come and commented. It's extraordinary. So there is a huge outpouring of emotion, and also, I would like to make the point, majority of them women. You know, I think that's an important point. Majority of them women who are, you know, saying, oh, you know, let's get Neil back. We always enjoyed his show. So if I was management, I would take the view, hey, you've been through this. You went through the entire judicial procedure. You were found not guilty on everything, acquitted on every case. Please come back. That's personally what I would do. But as I said, I'm not management of a major network.
You're not.
What would you do? You're a smart guy, but you know, and you've got a finger on the pulse.
I'm not management either, unfortunately. No. Otherwise, I'd give myself a big show.
Of course you would, and a pay rise, a huge pay rise.
Yeah, I'd be the boss of the show. That's what I'd make.
You would be the king of the world, Russ, frankly. The boss of you. Yes, I know that.
Russ, thank you for joining me, mate. It's great to speak to you. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot. Bye, Tom.
Bye. That was Russ Kane, who used to work with.
The one thing that worries me about this whole thing, I mean, they've been very thorough with the investigation into the sex allegations and stuff. Nobody seems to be looking at the fact that he's not a real doctor.
No, he's not.
So how many more patients is he going to...
Unless you're on a plane and someone goes, is there a doctor in the house?
Yeah. He goes, hi, I'm here. And you can actually put your hand up and mean it.
You know, don't think
well, he apparently didn't put
doctor.
His hand up. So.
No. No.
Leo just destroying everything there.
Yeah.
Your pal there made some very good points. I think he's a sacrificial lamb, to be honest. I think he's just, we need to chuck some logs on the fire so we can't see what's actually going on.
Although, you know, there is, you know, the judge did say he believed all of the, victims, or alleged victims, apparent victims.
How many people come forward against him?
I think there were six, I believe. I'm not sure 100% on that, but it was a few. And he said he believed them. And they feel very, very let down, given that the judge said that he believed them because it was a magistrate. He then said there wasn't enough evidence to find him guilty. And Neil Fox did say that there was a culture of, which I thought, you know, you found amusing, Tony, but, you know, of tickling and squeezing. Yeah. And I've spoken to other people who worked in that sort of world around that time, and they said everyone they know there, and I'm not saying that Neil Fox did this, albeit he did say there was, you know, he did do some tickling and squeezing, but, you know, who would... Women were saying, you know, it was happened quite common in this world where we would be goosed or whatever, you know?
I think there's two... You have to make a very clear distinction, and there's two camps. There's the tickling and squeezing camp, which is maybe quite a few older hairy DJs or, you know, not-so-hairy DJs that maybe had some groupies, had some fun. I'm not justifying any of this. I'm just saying there's two camps. They maybe got off with young groupies and did a bit of tickling and squeezing. Then there's the other camp, which is the actually very kind of sadistic... nasty Savile camp.
But then there's of course an argument that by accepting one as a thing that happens, it feeds into Jimmy Savile being allowed to get away with it. Yeah, you know, Tom Jones, for instance, going, well, you know, we all knew he liked young girls, but, you know, that was just Savile being a lad, wasn't it? Well, you know, that's how Jimmy Savile managed to get away with what he was getting away with for so long.
What I couldn't understand is everybody was saying we couldn't do anything about Jimmy Savile, we couldn't confront it, couldn't raise it as an issue because he was so powerful. It's like he wasn't Godzilla. You know what I mean? He was like a sort of middling to crappy sort of DJ. He was on presented Talk
of
Pops.
But that's not true, Leo. You know, this is a man who had the keys to Broadmoor, for crying out loud. You know, this is a...
He's a majorly powerful individual.
Yeah,
because
he made so much money. And, you know, money talks and charity. And, you know, money talks.
But I think people need to make that distinction. I know what you're saying, that one league could lead on to the other. But there are two different, very different stories going on. Cyril Smith, Jimmy Savile, that's the heinous kind of child sacrifice, procuring of children out of institutions for an elite to deal with and do their nasty stuff to. That's very different from tickling and squeezing at the back of a student.
And it is all, and it, there is the argument that it's all being sort of lumped in together, and there is a distinction. And I'm not saying it's not wrong, but it's certainly.
That's why I think they've been dragged in because it diverts attention away from the people who are doing the real nasty stuff.
Well, the thing is, I mean, I think if you were groped or whatever, you might not see it as just a bit of tickling or whatever, you know what I mean?
Course,
I mean, the trouble is with stuff that happened like 20 years ago,
it's impossible very, very tough to prove. Right, well, anyway, let's play another Christmas song. Let's cheer it up a bit by another Christmas song, then we'll come back and we'll talk a bit more, some lighter stories after this. All I Want for Christmas Is You by Mariah Carey. This is camp as, well, Christmas. It's Fubar Radio. It's 10:50. We're here doing all sorts of Christmas songs and going through the papers with Leo Kirst and Tony Morezi, my two co-presenters for the day. Now, obviously, at the start of the show, I introed on British astronaut Tim Peake, who is launching off to the International Space Station at 11:03 today. So that's 13 minutes away, tip at 10:50. Hopefully, he'll get there safely and come back safely. But as I say, he's going to miss Christmas, which means all of the other stuff that comes with Christmas, like Mrs. Brown's Boys repeats and Strictly Come Dancing final, and the Strictly Come Dancing Christmas special as well, you know, which he'll be obviously devastated about. Text Santa. I know ABBA, ITV are doing an ABBA special on Christmas Eve. He'll miss all of those things. So can we go?
Maybe that's why he's going.
Can we come with him? I mean, would you guys like to be blasted into space? Would you like to go and do the experience?
I'd just like to be blasted, not finger blasted as possible. I'd just like to be blasted by a blunderbuss in the back of the head. Wake me up a bit. Of course I'd
We can have it arranged, Tony.
Who wouldn't want to go into space? Just orbit would do me, just a bit of orbit.
Yeah, that is space, isn't it?
Well, you can. Well,
I suppose there's far into space. I don't know if I'd want to go too far, because I'd get scared.
Of what?
Like not being able to get back. But I'd like to go into orbit. Have you seen that film Gravity, where Sandra Bullock goes into space?
Yeah, did you like it?
It was amazing. It was edge of my seat. Watched it three times.
I thought it was a bit fanciful.
Yeah, I didn't know.
Like that end bit.
It's because it's fanciful. It's a Hollywood film.
It's meant to be based in reality, right?
It's Ken Loach thing. George Clooney wearing aftershave and zero gravity, twirling birds again. It's like, oh my God, it's George Clooney doing anything. If he was inside a rhino. You know, just like that. Oh,
but like she fell, to Earth, and
yeah,
and then like just managed to crawl out of that thing. And
they made
like,
it feel
fine. I'm fine.
They made
Don't
it feel really
me.
Real, like it, that's how it would happen.
Yeah,
like blasting across space using a fire extinguisher as a rocket.
We should send George Clooney.
Is that based on science? I'm not sure.
I think George Clooney's genitalia should be sent into space in a deep probe, representing. It's got most of the DNA of humanity, probably. Within it, so just send them off into space
to be preserved forever for future generations. So we've got a list of songs that Tim Peake is going to be blasting off to.
Twin Peaks.
What are they, Tony Morezi?
Can you read them, Leo? Because I haven't got my glasses. Sorry.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
What are they, Leo?
Tony is wearing his glasses. He just can't read.
Is that why you haven't got any material? Because you can't write it down because you won't be able to read it again.
It's Queen, U2, and Coldplay.
Christ.
Yeah.
Coldplay.
And Freddie. Yeah, what's interesting? There's
Can
a
you
space.
Split your wrists in space?
There's a space. Well, yeah, you need to do it next to this sort of vacuum cleaner thing that sucks the blood in. Otherwise, you soil the air. Yeah, what's interesting is all those things have got a space theme. Like Bono is in U2, the high Rain. Altitude spy plane. And Queen, Freddie Mercury. That's a planet.
It is a planet.
And also he had orgies at very high altitude in a Boeing 747, didn't he? In the 70s and 80s.
Lad.
Yeah, I can't tell you too much about him as I can't remember. But there was a lot of blokes and a lot of drugs.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of drugs.
Were you there?
No, of course I wasn't. I was the pilot.
I used to work with a policeman who was his close protection officer, though.
Did you?
Yeah.
I mean, that's not a gag. It's not a gag.
No. I was waiting for a lot of protection.
This is the problem with getting punking on you, because every time he says anything, you're expecting there to be some sort of dreadful punchline. But that was apparently that was the punchline.
Yeah.
And also, there's another story. Well, obviously, it's sort of space related. Star Wars is out soon, and obviously, so we've got a host of stories from the papers about Star Wars and how apparently it's going to sell 500,000 tickets in its first weekend. Apparently, they've basically sold out. But there's a story about a man who has devoted his life to becoming a full-time Jedi. His name's Kevin Cottam. It's a story in the Mirror today.
Yeah.
And it talks about how he suffers for his faith.
Yeah. Sure he's not a Catholic.
When he yes. When he leaves his flat in Rhyl. That's the home in North Wales.
He doesn't suffer for his faith. He suffers for
living
he
in Rhyl. If anyone does live in Rio, of course.
I was there recently. I left my pun man outfit there, and it was a lovely place. It was really warm as well. It was nice.
Well, isn't Rio like they call it like the Welsh Riviera?
Yeah.
They guess, they do. Is it near Abersock? Oh, I was interviewing someone the other day, and they said Abersock's called the Welsh Riviera because they get the weather from Spain. So maybe it was warm.
Right.
But this guy says he gets bullied, effectively, when he leaves his flat in Rhyl in North Wales. And he tells a story about how people often mock him by shouting, "I am your father," which is Darth Vader's famous words to Luke Skywalker.
But yeah, I would shout,
definitely not related to you, mate.
I'm not related to you.
I'm not your father. I'm definitely nothing to do with you. And he added, "One incident really stuck with me. This man had three young children, and one was excitedly saying, 'Look, it's Batman,' while another was saying he was wrong and that I was a Jedi. And the man said, 'No, it isn't. It's that fucking weirdo.'"
Yeah,
I was mortified.
Terrible parenting, because he's obviously never shown his kids the Batman films.
Yes, true. Or a fucking weirdo.
See, there was a point in time where people like this would be interned and put into nice, safe places away from
the rest of the community.
Now they've let people like Leo and this bloke out.
That's Cameron's Britain, isn't it?
It's the community, basically.
I think it's nice in a way, because, like, you know, you get all these special things. If you believe in something from, like, 2,000 years ago, whether it's, like, Jesus, the Christianity one, Islam, whatever, Catholicism, whatever the other ones are, you know, everybody just, you're allowed all this, like, you're allowed days off work, and you can, like, you know, you're not allowed to use electric light or whatever. This guy's got his lightsaber registered as a religious item.
And there's a picture of him getting on a bus.
It's sort of showing up, you know, the whole thing is kind of a bit nonsensical.
I've registered my dildo as a religious item. That's fair enough.
And it's a virgin, probably, as well. there's a photo of him getting on the bus. I love that. Do Jedis get the bus? I don't know.
Only at peak times. Only when it was a bus replacement service. Hoverboard replacement service. This is not the bus you're looking for.
The Jedi's here. Get off. Right, we'll play another Christmas song. We'll come back. I'm going to talk a bit about the X Factor. I don't know if you two guys watched it or are interested, but we'll talk about it because it was a shambles. And I interviewed Simon Cowell last week. I interviewed Rita Ora last week. I interviewed them all. So we'll talk a bit about that. And then we'll talk about some other stuff that we've noticed. This is a cracking song. This is the Pogues and Kirsty MacColl. I interviewed a while ago. You remember I interviewed Steve Lillywhite, the producer of this song.
Oh, great producer.
Yeah, he is a great producer. Yeah. And it was a great interview as well. We played all of his songs that he's, you know, been involved. Not all of them, because he's been in too many, but, you know, some of the best ones. That is, by the way, on my SoundCloud, Tom Latcham interviews, if you want to listen to that. But this is Fairy Tale in New York by the Pogues and Kirsty MacColl. It's 10:57. It's Foo Bar Radio with Tony Morezi, Leo Kirst, and me, Tom Latcham.
Christmas Eve, babe, in the drunk tank, an old man said to me, "Won't see another one." And then he sang a song, the rare old mountain tune. I turned my face away and dreamed about you. Got on a lucky one, came in 18-1. I've got a feeling this year's for me and you. So happy Christmas. When all our dreams come true.
They got cars big as bars, they got rivers of gold, but the wind goes right through you, it's no place for the old. When you first took my hand on a cold Christmas Eve, you promised me Broadway was waiting for me.
You were pretty queen of New York City when the band finished playing.
find someone.
Well, so could anyone. You took my dreams from me when I first found you.
I kept them with me, babe. I put them with my own. Can't make it all alone. I built my dreams around you. For Christmas Day.
Hello, it's Tom Latcham here. It's Football Radio. It's 11:02, just into the second hour. Second and final hour of this last show we have before Christmas. Tony Morezi there, my co-presenter, looking at his watch. I don't know what that means. Is he bored? I don't know. Are you bored?
I was just confirming the time.
Right, it was 11:02.
It's just when you're a comic.
I'm not lying.
Am I not joking? You're always looking at the time when you're a comic. You're always looking at the time.
Are you?
You know, whether you're on
God,
stage.
How long have I got
sex
to go in when no one's laughing?
Yeah, Tony's going to
pasta.
Tony's going to make sure that he overruns by the right amount of time.
That is the voice of Leo Kurse as well, my other co-presenter. Now, the NHS, there's a story that's been running in the yesterday and today. The NHS has partnered with dating app Tinder to raise awareness about organ donations. The app is used to find people a good personality match, but for the next fortnight it will also encourage users to become a donor. People who swipe on some pitch on the app will be encouraged to sign up to the NHS organ donor register, and Tinder has created bespoke profiles for some of its more high profile members, including Olympic gold medalist Jade Jones, Made in Chelsea's Jamie Lang, and friend of the show Gemma Oten, and she joins us now on the line. Hello Gem.
Hi Tom.
How
can I just clarify something? I've literally just woken up because you said you were ringing at half 11.
The showbiz illusion, Gemma. The showbiz illusion. You're not
like,
tell
I literally
people.
Have a false eyelash down my cheek, a bit of dribble, and I was at a Christmas party last night.
Gemma, that's a standard. That's a standard morning for you, isn't it?
Yeah, normally it's not midday. You've done well, to be honest. I'll check me first.
Well, we are glad you are here joining us. And I mean, it was a Christmas party last night, not a Tinder date.
Not a Tinder date, no. I'm getting a lot of, not abuse, I'm getting a lot of great feedback for this Tinder stuff, but we'll get on to the other side of it.
Okay, well, let me ask you in the first place, I suppose, why is the NHS doing this?
Well, I mean, basically, they've lost sort of, about 7,000, I think the statistic is, about people dying whilst waiting for organ donation. You know, there's 6,000 people waiting in the meantime, and there's not the rate of people signing up to be organ donors like they used to be. And I think, basically, I was guilty of it as well, saying, oh, yeah, you know, when I go, I want my organs to be donated. But that can't happen unless people actually take that last step to signing up. So this is what it's about, really. It's about getting people to actually, you know, sign up for the register so it's done, it's there, and hopefully more lives can be saved.
Okay, and how did you come to be involved, Gem? I mean, obviously, you know, you're a well-known actress who was in Emmerdale until not that long ago.
Nobody knows who I am now.
Oh, they all do, Gem, and they all do. All the listeners on this station do. How come you came to be involved?
Well, our lovely Kitty Gard this year, Kitty McGeever, who played Lizzie in the show, and one of the big shocks for us was that she was waiting for a kidney transplant, and she never got it. And one thing that blew my mind was that even though she died with lack of a transplant, she actually donated her liver. I just thought that was like, wow, you know, she passed away not getting what she needed, but she still gave what she could. And you know, we missed a daily, and she was only 45, I think. And so there was that, and then also my good friend Caroline, who works at Now Magazine, her friend Ashley Moore was in dire need of a lung transplant, and, you know, Caroline, obviously, as one of my best friends, asked me to get on board with that because of my little bit of profile, and we did a lot of campaigning for that as well. So when, you know, the NHS organ donation, you know, saw all the things I've been doing this year and approached me, and of course I was delighted to help.
And do you think that it'll make a difference? I mean, you obviously hope so. Do you think it can?
Well, 2 hours into the launch yesterday, we found out that 800 people had signed up to the organ donor list. So it's clearly working. And that's, you know, that's amazing. And this goes on for the next 2 weeks now. So hopefully, touch wood, knocking head, you know, this is something that's going to work. I mean, using social media for good and sort of moving along with the times, I think it's a fantastic idea to team up with Tinder.
Or all those people that have signed up, are they just think they might get to date you? Is that not why they're doing it?
And if they are, good, this is working. Makes me feel good about myself.
Are people getting giddy to spot you on Tinder? I mean, Producer Will, I don't know if I should... Can I tell the story, Producer Will? I'm going to tell it anyway. He's not saying no. Producer Will is on Tinder, and he got matched with Jay Jones yesterday, and he thought, oh, I'm in here with an Olympic athlete. But then he swiped right, and he was...
got a javelin in the eye.
he was sad to sad, probably not the right word, but sad in a way to learn that actually there was a message that asking him to donate an organ. So are people getting giddy to
not
think
that kind of organ,
not that kind of organ, thank you, Gemma. Yeah,
not like a church organ.
No, I think she's talking about a penis, Tony. I mean,
I've had my name down on the penis transfer list for months now. People come over here, they get on the list.
I tell you what, Gemma, you can take the girl out of Hull, but you can't take the Hull out of girl. That's what I say. But are people getting giddy to spot you on Tinder, not knowing what it is?
I've had quite a few tweets going, is this you? And also, like, tweets going, that moment when you swipe right, thinking it's Gemma and you go on the date with, and you get told to bloody sign up for something crap. All right, well, I don't know, if that's your ethos in life, my love, I don't want to be part of yours.
Well, maybe, Gem, if someone... Because obviously, we've got two kidneys, right? We only need one. Maybe if someone gives a kidney, you could date them. Because that's, you know, it's not...
Yeah, maybe. As long as everything is in full working order down there.
How about someone needs a kid's knee?
Oh, sorry. Totally misheard that.
No, he's just messing with you. In fact, Tony, are you nicking Leo Curse's dreadful puns now?
I thought I tried to get in there before him to save him from dying.
I would not do that.
Gem, what are your hopes in this? I mean, are you a Tinder dater?
No, I'm not on Tinder. I'm not on any online dating. Maybe I should be, but I'm happy being free, single, and ready to mingle, they say.
You don't need Tinder, love. You just come round my house on Thursday night. I'll sort you out.
I mean, how could you resist that offer,
Gemma?
Have
a nice brew. Have a nice brew, and we'll stick our feet on.
How could you resist an offer like that? Listen, Gem, thank you very much, and I hope it goes well. And I might see you later on today.
Yeah,
well,
I'll see you later on today.
Oh, yeah, I'm seeing you later on today. Okay, well, look forward to that.
I'm going to annoy you for an hour before you go to your Christmas party and get steaming drunk.
That's absolutely right, Gem. Listen, go back to bed, and thank you. I'm glad that you had your phone with you. It's not midday, by the way. It's 11 o'clock, 11:10, but I'm glad that you did, and go back to sleep. Take your mascara off.
It's almost time for a glass of wine, actually, I think.
There we go. That's Gemma Roten there, the former Emmerdale actress and friend of the show. On the piss at 11 in the morning. Happy days. Leo Curse.
She'll be needing one of those levers soon.
She will.
I think it's a great scheme. It's getting like, how many did she say? 8,000 people signed up already.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's good, isn't it?
I think the whole organ donation thing, it should be you choose to opt in to donate. Because I never signed up just because I'm superstitious and I think it's going to jinx me. I'm going to die and people are going to get their hands on my delicious organs. Like, so I never signed up. But if it was somewhere you had to opt out. We had to sign up to opt out. I wouldn't bother signing up to opt out.
I think they are trying to make that move.
It's quite an old thing, actually, because in North London, we've got a Donna card. When you die, your organs get made into a donor. Do you know what's supposed to be? That's a great joke.
And talking about people who've been starting new relationships, and it's a sort of a weak link between Tinder and someone else. I don't know if you saw at the weekend, I had to do this up for a newspaper. Kylie Minogue became the first person she became a Desert Island Discs first when she got her partner, Joshua Sass, to select a song for her without knowing. Now, she's 47. She's childless. It's relevant to my point. Joshua Sass is 20 years younger than her, and basically, she didn't know what he was going to do and what he did. His father is a poet called Dominic Sass, who's dead. He died in a plane crash in 1992. But what he did instead was read one of his father's erotic poems over piano music. And afterwards, she was like, I forgot to breathe during that. Breathe, Minogue. Oh, I'm crying tears. They're happy tears. That's why you're childless at 47, because you've only known him since bloody August. Well, don't do that.
Got it. There's a massive build-up to
that. That's not okay, is it? Yeah.
Massive build-up to that. I think she's probably done that because she's only got one or two tunes herself. She's had a career.
Don't play your own tunes, Tony.
I know, but let's face it, she's like nestled on a one-tune egg for the last 30 years, hasn't she?
Did she get to take Better the Devil You Know to the desert island?
No, but everyone else wanted to.
Just a reminder how much better things are on the desert island without Stock Aitken and Waterman.
Yeah, it's true. Her songs are actually really banal. I can't remember them now, but they were really pretty banal. No real. One of them was in an Excess song, unsurprisingly, because she used to go out with Michael Hutchence.
Yeah, but her new boyfriend didn't like that. That's like, you know, she's like, you know what I mean?
Playing a record of my old dead lover.
Yeah. He was so great. He was so perfect.
This is one by Stevie Wonder. I noshed him off in the 80s.
She didn't nosh off Stevie Wonder. That is just a joke.
But actually,
Tony
my
Rosie.
Mate did shag her after a club night about 15 years
really?
Ago.
Really?
Yeah, my mate shagged her. But he's one of those kind of player, Piccadilly club guys.
Fair play.
Unlike me. I was the minicab driver.
Telling that story about your mate who shagged Kylie Minogue 15 years ago. It is the second best thing to actually having shagged Kylie Minogue 15 years ago.
So it was pretty good.
Yeah. Excellent. Right, let's play another song. We're on to Christmas songs. Bit of Wham. I mean, it's sort of close to an excess. It's the same sort of time period, but much worse. It's Last Christmas. It's Food by Radio 11:30.
Save me from
It's Fubar Radio, it's 11:17 here. I'm here with Tony Morese and Leo Kirst, my co-presenters for the day, both comedians, both of whom have done a bit of telly, and they were just informing me during that song that... So, Leo did Dinner Date.
Yeah, I did Dinner Date.
And apparently, every time there's a repeat of Dinner Date on, he gets propositioned.
Yeah, and you can tell, if it's shown in, like, Australia, loads of Australian girls get in touch, and if it's shown in Dubai, like, girls from Dubai get in touch.
Showing, but I actually it's met proving that women will literally fuck anything on telly.
No, I'm very eligible. I'm like in my mid to late 30s,
living in a big shared house.
Stuff like, yeah, yeah.
Can't like, cook.
Like people
performing for 50 quid a night.
Because sometimes I got £80 on Sunday night. Yeah, and I've met my current girlfriend through...
Happens to me as well. I used to work on Country Life, that country show, and every time
what,
I...
Country Life?
An old show on Sky. And every time I go past a field, like, I see cows, sheep, they start coming towards me. I'm like, I'm inundated with livestock.
Although the next time he walks past the field, the cows all run away, very scared.
They've seen him do it once.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't like his style.
He's not gentle. You know, I did some TV about 15 years ago, and you do get shagged off the back of it. It's quite as simple as that.
Is that right?
Yeah, you do. So, something to look forward to.
Well, I mean, I've done the Sky News pay per view, and all I get is people going, "Who's this left wing prick?"
You have to have a certain level of looks, Tom.
You can't just go in at the bottom end and expect to swim with whole length. What you need to do, you need to get a snorkel, snorkel of goodness. That's what you need.
Maybe I can borrow yours, Tony.
I don't have one. I drowned. That's what I'm here now.
So we've got some other stories that have sort of tickled our fancy, or we've noticed today. Both of these stories now are related to gay LGBT issues, I suppose, yeah, you could say. And I've had plenty of trans people on my show, big support of trans community. But there is one particularly trans story in the papers recently, which is a bit strange, I would say. Leo, what is it?
So this guy is about 50 or something. He's got like kids, and he's decided he's transgender. So he's decided he's a woman, but not just. I mean, that's fine. I mean, it's unusual, but it's fine. But what's unusual about it is he's decided he's a 6-year-old woman, which, I mean, you can change gender. You can't change your age.
No.
You're still like a 6'4" hulking, great, hairy. You know, like he's not gonna. He's not going to pass at primary school.
This is Stephanie Walshut from Toronto. Let's have a little listen to her.
I can't deny I was married. I can't deny I have children. But I've moved forward now, and I've gone back to being a child. I don't want to be an adult right now, and I just live my life like I couldn't when I was in school.
How are things in your life now?
Well, I have a mummy and daddy, adopted mummy and daddy, who are totally comfortable with me being a little girl, and their children and their grandchildren are totally supportive. In fact, her youngest granddaughter, when I was eight, a year ago I was eight, and she was seven, and she said to me, I want you to be the little sister, so I'll be 9. I said, well, I don't mind going to 6, so I've been 6 ever since.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Someone needs to go on a naughty step immediately, I think.
Yeah. This is a symptom of, people just want to be infants again. Somebody posted on Facebook the other day, I'm a comedian, I use the term loosely, but he said, do you know where I can get adult colouring in books?
Ugh.
For his depression or something.
That's what newspapers were made for, basically.
But it's like, I thought, like, what on earth is this?
Why would anyone want an adult colouring in book?
But then I was just telling my girlfriend about it, and we were standing next to a shop, and the Scribbler down in Victoria, and in the window it had adult colouring in books.
Dear God, can you imagine getting on a train and seeing an adult doing a colouring in?
Oh, man.
Mate, you've gone out the edges. You're an adult. That really shouldn't happen.
Yeah. We need to bring back bullying. We need to bring back hardcore.
You do need a bit of bullying.
I mean, you say you can't change your age. We'd all like. I mean, I'd like to go back to 18. You know what I mean? I'd like to work in a garden centre again and like go raving all weekend. Can't happen. You've got responsibilities. It's not allowed. And you see the photo of this this 6'4" transgender woman with her
child,
really tiny parents, and she's got like a bow in her hair and stuff. And it's like, Taking her out, you know. It's like, have you met our daughter? Yep, she's six.
And they say the children. He's saying, or the, she is saying, the children and grandchildren are really supportive. No, they're not. Definitely not. Nobody's going to be. I wouldn't be. My mum and dad brought back, oh, here's this 50-year-old guy's your 6-year-old sister. What the fuck are you on about?
What does this say about Western life and Western society? You know, if he had something to get on with, like digging in a coal mine, or you know, or something, he wouldn't have time for this.
No.
Basically, he needs a good punch in the face, like my old man. So he need a good punch in the face. Everything will be all right.
Your dad sounds lovely. Anyway, moving on to another story, which is related to LGBT community.
What was it?
This is a Robert Dias advert, which is has baffled the country. Let's play it, and we can see why it's baffled the country. Make up your own minds.
Hi, my name's Marcus. I work at Robert Dias and I'm gay. I like going out with my friends and playing volleyball. I also like showing our gay and straight customers a funky range of our Christmas gifts.
Hi, my name is James. I'm straight and I work at Robert Dias. I like sailing, baking and showing off all our Christmas kitchen gadgets to our gay and straight customers.
I'm straight and I love shopping at Robert Dias.
I'm gay and I love shopping at Robert Dias.
I'm bisexual and I always find something I love at Robert Dias.
Look at this Christmas tree. It's perfect for a gay person or a straight person.
This drill would work a treat in a straight person's home or a gay person's.
Robert Dias, where gays and straights can buy drills and much, much more.
I'm not really told.
Do you know what this is? This is classic, like someone at the hot top of Robert Dias has gone, I've got an idea. And they've gone, what, should we get an advertising firm in? No, I've got it. Yeah, I've got it because, you know, we've got a shop in Soho. What we need to do is tell everybody that everyone's welcome.
I've got to tell you, I'm straight and I don't know how to use a drill, so...
I do. I've got several drills.
Have you?
Yeah.
No, I haven't. The other day, in fact, I had a guy come round to fix my... We've got mice in my ceiling, and my mates literally had to sort of cut holes. He's my landlord. He's had to cut holes in the roof. I don't know how to do that. And then seal them back up so you can put poison up there. And the bloke came, this sort of, you know, rat man, and he was like, yeah, can you do that? And he was like, oh, no, it's not my job, mate. And I'm like, I mean, it's just... unscrewing something and I've done my ribs, so I can't do it. And he was like, no, I can't do it, mate. I was like, please. He's like, oh, all right, have you got a screwdriver? I was like, no, I mean, I haven't got a screwdriver. He's like, you haven't got a screwdriver? I was like, why haven't you got one? And he went, it's not my job. And he went, I've got one at home. I said, well, that's because you're a real man, isn't it? And he was like, are you not a real man? I said, no, I'm not. I pay for people like you to come round and do it.
That's the point, yeah. Was he gay?
I don't think so.
I'm gay and I can collect rats.
I'm gay and I can unscrew this. It's a piece of piss, mate. But yeah, so basically people are baffled about why this thing existed or why they made it.
Well, it's
but
a piss take of a thing that was in America, like a furniture advert from 2009. Have you got a clip of that?
Yeah, should we play it?
Yeah.
This is what they ripped off.
Can't we all just get along?
At the Red House Furniture,
we can.
At the Red House.
I'm Richard, a.k.a. Big Head. I work at the Red House, and I'm black.
At the Red House.
I like pumping iron and pumping furniture into people's homes.
I'm Johnny, a.k.a. T-Engage. I work at the Red House, and I'm white. I like deer hunting, bass fishing, and extending credit to all people.
At the Red House.
I'm black and I love the Red House.
I'm white and I love the Red House.
I'm a black woman and I love the Red House.
Notice in the Deep South, no gays.
No gays.
No, none. Not a single gay. Not a single gay in Deep South America.
I was thinking of being gay, but then I realised I was going to get shot.
By the guy that liked bass fishing.
But that's only kind of relevant, mate, taking the piss out of something, if the people who you're presenting your new advert to have seen the previous or are aware of it. Otherwise, it's a non-entity, isn't it?
I mean, I wonder as well how that advert went down in the Deep South, where lots of people are racist.
Yeah, probably.
Well, what, they sell to black people? I don't mean, I ain't going down there.
I'm black and I can use a drill. I'm white and I can dig a hole. Shit.
It's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life.
It is, isn't it? It is.
I'm bonkers. Gay and I like a big drill. I should have just done it like that. I could put any kind of attachment on the end. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
But I mean, who goes to Robert Dias for Christmas presents anyway? I mean, If anyone bought me a Christmas present from Robert Dyas, I'd be like, well,
well, at least you'd have a screwdriver.
You got the receipt.
Yeah, you'd have a screwdriver. Every man should have a little toolkit, though, even if it's just a little one on the key.
I've got a tiny toolkit, mate.
But everyone should have at least some kind of like little Leatherman, you know, little kind of little multi-tool which you can do all those little jobs with. I do say that's a good present for anyone at Christmas, whether they're gay, whether they're straight,
or
man,
a 6-year old, or a 6-year old living with a, you know, a 55-year old 6-year old living with a couple in
Alabama,
Toronto.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it was weird when the Crankies did it, and it's weird now.
That's right. Is it? Anyway, let's play another song. Christmas songs as ever. Snow is falling by Shaggin' Stevens. Yes, we're here with Leo Kerr.
Scraping the barrel.
That's when you know you've come at the end of the album.
Trust me, mate. We ain't.
Fubars.
Sweetwater Radio here. It's 11:31. I'm here with Tony Morezi and Leo Kurse. Tony Morezi talking about mattresses, I think, because
because I like leaving him on the street.
Because he's white and you can get a mattress here.
I don't get that.
It's from the last thing. It's literally that thing. Oh, right.
It was a put you in a position.
Tony Morosi has a brain and can remember things. So Helena Watts, who's going to be coming on and talking about, and my former co-presenter is going to be coming on and talking about the X Factor, is busy at work doing, you know, work stuff. You know, the Mirror isn't going to put itself out. The Mirror isn't going to write boring front pages like that on its own, is it? So
meow.
No, she didn't write that one. Her stories are all very exciting and interesting. But anyway, so the X Factor did come to an end. I don't know, have you guys watched any of the X Factor this year at all? Do you care?
No, I'm sorry. So I can't lie about this. I was grinding my own joints for a meat grinder at the time.
Yeah.
And I couldn't.
How did you get?
Watch it. It really went really well, actually.
Yeah.
Really well, yeah. I'm now.
Did you get through Britain's Got Talent audition?
We did. You, but Leo's onto that.
Yeah, I'm through the audition to the bit that's filmed in front of an audience, and I guess like maybe Simon Cowell or whatever, or judges.
So you went as pun man.
Pun man. Yeah, I didn't do it as myself. Wouldn't want to tarnish the brand of famous. Glossy brand of Leo Kerr. So yeah, I'm doing it as pun man. So I dress up as a superhero and do improvised puns. So people give me any subject and I do puns in it. Like, give me any subject right now, I'll do a pun in it.
Robert Dias.
Darth Vader. Darth Vader in the Robert Dias shop.
We went in there to get a tattoo needle because he likes tattooing.
I mean, is it linked to Robert Dias?
It's linked to both of them.
Is it? How?
There's a needle, tattoo needle. The tattooing's off Star Wars. Look, if it's going to be this difficult and the Britain's Got Talent.
No, it's full of idiots, the Britain's Got Talent audience.
I've got an audition, actually. I've got an audition coming up. I'm going in as a six-year-old girl. I'm going to sing to Simon Cowell.
That's a great idea. Your parents
waiting in the wings.
Yeah, with my midget parents deceased in a box.
12 years younger than you.
I think they'd go for that on Britain's Got Talent.
Yeah.
Because they like basically laughing at the less
the
fortunate
poor
than
and
us.
Needy.
Which is why Leo's done so well.
Yeah, that's why he got through. As soon as they heard his accent, I said, hey, we need a homeless person, then you come. Marvellous. So what are you going to do? Sleeping in a box for a team?
So at what stage are you through to this?
The ones that are filmed and there's judges and there's an audience.
Hmm.
So I don't know what I don't know if there's a number or a,
is it going to be, where is it in London, in the London
so
one?
There's ones in London. I want to go away on holiday in January, so I don't know if I can make the London ones, but London, Birmingham, it sounds like the thing written on the side of Trotters Independent Traders, doesn't it? London, Birmingham, Leeds,
just go on holiday to Birmingham,
Milan,
and then you've basically sorted it.
Yeah, you'll kill yourself before you get on the audition. Brilliant.
Well, there was another mistake on X Factor at the weekend, which followed up from Ollie Mears's. Were you here when we were talking about Ollie Mears's mistake like last time?
That was a shocking mistake. It just reveals that these things are all fixed.
Yeah. So he basically, I don't know if Tony won't have seen it because he was grinding his arm at the time, but he basically said the wrong. He told Monica, this person, she was going home when it was actually meant to be going to deadlock, and then it was decided by the vote of whatever. And he said, oh, you're going home, sort of revealing that they knew that this had happened, you know, that they were already going home. And then he just went, oh, I'm sorry. And we were saying, weren't we, that we did a big gig, a gig together, which was quite a lot of people in.
Might have been big for you, wasn't for?
Oh, absolute bollocks! That is just not true. I've been to your gigs, Leo, and I was the only person there.
The cat and rat in Dagenham, was it? Not that splendid venue.
The rat was chewing on the cat.
Spat in the eye.
And it just made my, like, just thinking about that dreadful dying on my ass made my penis. Go inside myself. So, Tony, have you ever had a bad gig? Have you ever made a mistake on stage? How do you cope with that?
Oh,
all the time.
Great one. I did a night with Joe Calzaghe.
It was a
boxing kind of chat night. And I was booked as like the entertainer to come on. And they had their chat interview on stage. And then this real amazing ring announcer from LA was like, ladies and gentlemen. And then he brought me on to do the comedy. And about 80% of people instantly walked out. And I was just standing on the edge of the stage in my shiny suit, telling jokes to about four people while about 400 are at the back having sausages and chatting amongst themselves. Then I decided to do a joke, which is, I can't go into it, it's too long. But it's about halal meat and boxing. It's kind of relevant. And that was when he came over and said, enough, and just drew his fingers across his throat and said, "Get off stage, please." But I got paid.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, well, that's basically he was singing Halal Meat to the Rocky theme tune. that's what he means.
One of my best bits. Yeah. And I thought, when can I ever use that bit of material? And that was
clearly never. Because I mean, if you couldn't use it then, there's no other time. So probably leave that one in the.
But the
leave
weird
that one
thing,
behind.
Though, which I found out that night, is Joe Calzaghe is actually a 7-year-old boy. and he revealed on stage that night, and so that was quite interesting.
Is he going on Britain's Got Talent now?
There's an embryo just thrown on the stage.
I met Simon Cowell last week. I interviewed Simon Cowell. It's interesting, right? So this just shows you what you can do if you're moneyed and powerful. So we were doing a sit down interviews. There was the daily papers in the one corner, and I was doing it for the Sunday papers in the other with some of the other Sunday journalists. And he came between the two, and he said to his PR, "We're in a hotel, right, in a bar of a hotel, not outside." And he said, "Can I smoke in here?" I was like, "Well, you know you can't smoke in here. You know the rules, Simon." But his PR just went, "I guess you probably could if you wanted." And he went, "All right, I will." And so she went and ran and got him some fags, and he smoked and he sparked up while we were doing the interview. And there was a really strange sort of power play there when you're doing the interview, because he's like, because, you know, we can't smoke. If we smoke, we get chucked out.
Yeah.
But he's just there in the corner, sort of like holding court, smoking. And you're like, straight away, he puts himself on a position of like power during this interview. I thought about what I should have done was just grab the packet and said, "Can I have one, mate?" And then started handing them a bag.
"Is it okay if I do some smacking?"
Yeah. "I've got a crack pipe. Is that all right, mate?"
I shoot people through like with the window with my sniper rifle. So, you know, you're allowed to smoke. But yeah, that's power, isn't it? That's clear.
It's like Putin.
Is it? Was he smoking in
Darth
hotels?
Vader. If he wanted to, he could.
He could, actually.
Change the laws.
Yeah, he could, to be fair. So could Simon Cowell.
Yeah.
He's probably Where does Putin go toilet? In a tin.
Come on, man. Leave the puns to the experts.
No, look at that. That's the best laugh that has been through that window.
Leave that. Yeah, I mean, assistant producer Neve's just an idiot, basically. She'll laugh at anything, apart from Leo and I. So, Tony, you can come again.
Thanks very much.
But someone also during this, during the X Factor final, got trolled, Leo, didn't they? Who was that?
Oh, is this the Hulk Hogan?
Mm.
Hulk Hogan thing.
This is not a quiz. No, you've been briefed on it, mate.
Well, yeah, but like you didn't say Hulk Hogan got trolled. And so, but it is the
is
Hulk
it,
Hogan
is
thing.
It Hulk Hogan. Yes,
lucky we didn't do this at the start of the show. I'd be like rattling through everything that was on that like list of stuff that you sent us. But yeah, Hulk Hogan. So, and it's not the first time it's happened. But somebody sent him a picture. So Cheryl Fernandez, St. Francis of Assisi, whatever she's called. she's been pictured looking
gaunt.
Gaunt is the word that the Daily Mail would use.
Drawn.
I think she was
not John Gaunt.
I think she was flaunting. Flaunting her, that's another word they use. But no, I thought she looked great. She looked fine. Certainly a lot better than, like, man, you see some, like, you know, fat folk and you're like, maybe you could. But anyway, like, so she looked a bit thin. So somebody tweeted that picture to Hulk Hogan saying, "My sister has got AIDS. Can you please retweet and support?" And like Hulk Hogan, retweeted, you know, be like, "Hey, God bless you," all this sort of stuff. But who's going to go and check everything? Like, you're not going to check.
He said, "Tons of love and positive prayers for your sis. God's got her. Everything will be good. Only love."
Positive is maybe. Positive is maybe the wrong choice of words.
Yes,
given the context.
But it's not the first time it's happened, is it?
No, he got.
He's,
He got sent a picture of Madeleine McCann saying this is this. But sent a picture of Madeleine McCann saying my sister's
niece.
My niece has won the fancy dress hide and seek competition.
Yeah. And he retweeted it.
And he retweeted
he
retweets anything though.
He does, doesn't he?
I sent him a tweet about my wife. So she's been cheating on me. Can you come over and body slam her in the middle of the road? And he did. He flew over from LA, punched her straight in the face, and then threw her under a bus on the North Circular Road. So it worked out well for me in the end.
And for him, he won WrestleMania off the back of that.
Good old Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, good old Hulk Hogan. Like, what a lad.
I liked watching him good when lad. I was a kid. He didn't like watching Hulk Hogan.
When you were a kid, you must have been a boot.
He's been around since the 30s.
He was living with some parents that were younger than him.
Yeah. You've been a 6-year-old boy for 94 years. Mum, can I watch War Rumble? I grew out the side of Hulk Hogan's leg. like a boil.
Well, just yesterday, my mate, Tony's mate as well, Darius Davies, is a comedian. And when he was 19, he took steroids with his, he had this dream of becoming a professional wrestler despite being about 8.5 stone. That's after the steroids. And I saw the video that he sent to WWF to try and apply to be a professional wrestler. And he's like, he's saying, like, you know, I'm going to take you out, Hulk Hogan, all that sort of stuff. It's the funniest thing.
Did he make it as a wrestler?
No, he's still waiting to hear back from him.
No, he's now a rent boy, actually. Yeah. Not in the barrier, he just collects rent for a number of landlords in North London.
It's actually quite hard to become a wrestler. There was a documentary on the family of wrestlers from Norwich.
Right.
And it's as good as it sounds.
Surely it's easier if you're from Norwich.
Fingers in the ring.
Yeah, you'd think it'd be quite, you'd be like handy, dexterous. But like they went along to the tryouts and the brother didn't make it. And the sister did, and the sister's like high flying now in the WWE. Her name I can't remember what her name is, but he didn't make it because he was a bit Paige. He was a bit flabby,
right?
So he was like, you need to go away and work on it. But it's quite a high level.
Yeah.
I mean, an eight stone guy isn't going to make it.
No,
really.
I quite like Greco-Roman wrestling. You know, it's just two men naked,
oiled up,
organic olive oil,
naked as the day they were born.
In Robert Dias's
by the drill selection. You can buy drill here and enjoy live wrestling, whether you're gay or straight.
Okay, well, let's play another song, and we're going to come back. I mean, let's probably talk a bit about sport. You're interested in Tyson Fury, aren't you? Mm. Aren't you, Tony? Yeah, Tony Morezi here with me, Tom Latcham. And Leo Kuss. I'm not Leo Kuss. You're Leo Kuss. Let's play Do They Know It's Christmas. Bit of Band-Aid. We really are scraping the barrel, but here you go. Food by Wrestling 43.
Geldof.
It's Christmas time. There's no need to be afraid. At Christmas time, we let in light and we banish shame.
And in our world of plenty, we can spread a smile of joy. Throw your arms around the world at Christmas time. But say a prayer, pray for the other one.
Bells that ring there are the clanging chimes of doom. Well, tonight that gun is them, the stand of you.
And there won't be snow in Africa this Christmas time. The greatest gift they'll get this year is life.
Deprived, if the tables turn, would you survive?
Here's to them underneath that burning sun.
You ain't gotta feel guilt, just selfless. Give a little help to the helpless.
Do they know it's Christmas time at all?
Feed the world. Feed the world.
It's Fubar Radio, it's 11:48, and I'm still here with Tony Marazzi and Leo Kirst, my co-presenters for the day. Now, it's coming to the end, it's 11:48, it's coming to the end of this show, this last show before Christmas, but we've got a bit of sport for you to sort of close the show with. Heavyweight prospect Anthony Joshua this weekend stopped Dillian White in seven rounds in what was a knockout night of boxing at London's O2 Arena. Chris Eubank Jr. battered Irishman Gary Spike O'Sullivan, while Olympic gold medalist Luke Howell lost for the first time, which is a shock, on points to Frenchman Ivan Mende. And joining us on the line to analyse what it all means for the future of British boxing is our pundit, resident pundit, Steve Lillis. Hello, Steve.
Hello, Tom. How are you, mate?
I'm all right. How are you? The line's better this time.
Oh, no, yeah, last time we got cut off wherever I was walking last time, but I think we're safe today.
Good stuff. How are you anyway? You well?
I'm good, I'm good. We had a great weekend's boxing last weekend. We got another good weekend this weekend with Billy Joe Saunders and Andy Lee. So boxing's looking up before the end of the year and Christmas.
I mean, Joshua looks like an exciting prospect. I mean, it comes off the back of Tyson Fury winning the World Heavyweight title, which was quite exciting at the time. And then obviously he made it less exciting by turning out to be a huge homophobe. But Joshua looks like an exciting prospect. Do you think he's got what it takes to become a world champion like Fury?
Yeah, look, he's got what it takes. There's no doubt about it. You know, he had very little amateur experience, about 40 fights, but he still won an Olympic gold. I think he got a silver medal at the World Championships, which is as good as an achievement as winning an Olympic gold. You get, because of the qualification process. But the best thing of the other night was him having a hard fight, because it ended this ridiculous talk from people around him, I'll say, Barry Hearn and Eddie Hearn, that he was ready to conquer the world last week, so to speak. You know, the hype that they put on him was crazy. There was a column that Barry did in The Sun last year comparing him with bits of Norton, bits of Ali, bits of Frazier, bits of Foreman. Now, it was silly and stupid, and Barry should know better. Because that's only putting pressure on Joshua, because people read this, the casual fan reads this and believes it. At this, they want to see him fight King Kong tomorrow. So, frankly, they're all saying now he's just on the learning process, and that's what it should be.
But it's an exciting but it's exciting time for British heavyweights, right? I mean, you've got Joshua, Tyson Fury, of course, the new world champion, and then David Hayes coming back. It's going to be a great 18 months or so, right?
It's fantastic. What's going to be interesting is how much David Hayes is going to have left when he comes back on January 16th. If he's still got plenty left, then he's a serious threat. Although he's not the biggest heavyweight, he's very, very quick. But I think, you know,
yeah, but Tyson Fury is dreadful, right? So
I don't think he is dreadful.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not going to say he's going to reign for a long, long time to come. But right now, I'd put him in with Joshua and Hay on the same night, because Hay's been out for 3 years, and Anthony Joshua, you're talking someone who's still relatively a novice, and had, I think before Saturday, he'd only had an hour of professional action in his life.
But Joshua, but Joshua has got the punching power to knock people out. Tyson Fury's been knocked down two or three times in his career. You know, you think that, you know, actually, if they did fight eventually, I just think that fight he had against Klitschko was one of the worst fights I think I've seen in an awfully long time.
You know what? I'm not here to defend Tyson Fury. I'm not a biggest fan of some of the things he said recently. Well, I'm no fan of it at all. But he went in there with a game plan, pretty much like Hay did when he fought that 7-foot Russian Nikolai Valuev 6 or 7 years ago. And that's what it is. I mean, you know, I'm not going to say Joshua wouldn't beat him 18 months down the line. But, you know, would Joshua fight? Would, you know, connect? I still think you have to go on how much experience Fury's had compared to him right now.
Okay.
And right now, I would go with Fury.
Okay. And Chris Eubank Jr., he was brought to the ring by his dad, Chris Eubank Sr. Has he got what it takes to live up to his dad's achievements in the sport, do you think?
I'm not sure he's going to go as far as his dad did, but he's certainly got what it takes to win a world title. You know, I just wish his dad would leave him alone and keep out the background. It's his son's show, not the father, the complete megalomaniac, the fella. You know, great fun for the media and us to talk about, Tom, but the guy's a raving lunatic, isn't he? You know.
Well, I noticed he was fresh out of the jungle, and he raced home from the jungle to sort of, yeah, slightly take the limelight, I suppose, away from his son.
He takes the limelight. When I say raving lunatic, you mean it in the nicest sense of the word. He's not a psychopath. He's a very polite fellow.
Yeah.
But he's just bonkers. He put the M in Maverick. That's what he is. But look, the son's a good fighter. You've got to remember that was his first fight on Saturday, or second fight was it with Adam Booth? I think it was his first fight with Adam Booth as his trainer. Adam, you know, that was something he had to do, was get a good trainer, because it wasn't working with his dad in the corner and Ronnie Davis. Ronnie's a good trainer, but the dad was having too much saying. The one thing with Adam Booth is, if Chris Senior starts interrupting with the training, he will be out the door. Adam Booth wasn't scared to split with George Groves and David Haye when he can have carried on and made money from them. He's a man, he's his own man, and we'll get rid of him if there's any problem with the old man. You do think it could be something that ends in tears eventually. Adam's a very good trainer, and he'll bring the best out in Chris Eubank Jr.
And finally, poor Luke Campbell. What does this mean for his career, the defeat? Can he recover?
He can recover. I mean, one loss doesn't make the end of the world, but, you know, he's at a stage now, he's 28 years of age, and another one or two losses will be the end of the road. I think, you know, he fought a good European-style opponent the other night, certainly, again, no world beater, and it is worrying. What worries me is he's lack of power. You know, he's used to that computer amateur system where you've beaten the computer scoring, and he's lack of power, you know, he's letting him down. There were faults the other night. If I was him, I'd look at the British champion, Scott Cardle. That's possibly a winnable fight, but it's not quite back to the drawing board for him, but it's a major setback. But, you know, he's not a bad fighter. You know, bad men don't win Olympic gold medals.
No, absolutely right. Steve, thank you very much for joining us, mate.
My pleasure. Have a Merry Christmas, Tom, and to everyone else at FUBAR.
You too, buddy. Thank you very much. That was Steve Lillis, our resident boxing expert.
He knew what he was talking about, didn't he?
He does, and he's a top bloke, Steve Lillis. He used to work at the News of the World.
He's talking about fighting King Kong there. I remember once in the 70s, I had to fight King Dong. I don't even remember who King Dong...
Don't remember. King Dong. He was the president...
I wasn't born in the 70s.
He was the president of North Korea, wasn't he? King Dong.
Sounds like a dildo.
It was, actually. It was a porn-style guy.
Right.
So, what was the thing you were saying about mattresses earlier?
Yeah, a friend of mine who came round to my house only yesterday was telling me about... We were talking about the Tyson-Fury fight, and what happened was in the ring itself, they put a load of memory foam under the ring, or under the surface of the ring, to make it really squidgy, which is the difference between, like, fighting... Like on sand, or fighting like
bouncy castle or something.
Yeah, on a bouncy castle. even better. Yeah, like being on a bouncy castle and trying to fight. And I said, well, how is that an advantage for only one boxer? He said, because Klitschko doesn't move a lot. So he'd just be stationary. Tyson would have been moving about and losing loads of energy. But his old man got wind of it.
Yeah, and they forced him.
Having collected loads of mattresses for years and chucked them back in his van. He got wind of it and he made them take the mattresses. He'd go, get that. Okay, I'll catch you. He took all the memory foam mattresses.
I know a mattress when I see one.
Yeah, and I tell you something, there's three or four under there. And he got them replaced with pocket spring mattresses. And that's why he won. That's true. Apparently true, isn't it?
The mattress thing is true. I don't know about the replacing them with pocket springs.
Do you believe that things
are true? And also, I don't know about chucking them in the back of his van.
Must have been silent night, though, because they weren't like rolling together.
Oh God!
And on that bombshell, I'd like to thank all of my guests today. Actress Gemma Roten, not Helena Watts, unfortunately, she couldn't join us. Our resident boxing pundit Steve Lillis, also Russ Kane as well, and you two guys, Leo Kirst, Tony Morezi, comedians allegedly. Where can people follow you? Where can people find out about you on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter at Tony Morezi. You can see some of my sketches on that I make on killtv.co.uk as well. Some good old sketches on there.
Leo,
I'm on
Britain's Got Talent soon.
I'm on Britain's Got Talent soon. If you can't wait till then, I put my jokes on Twitter at Comedy Leo.
There you go,
Comedy Leo.
So if you want more crap jokes, you know where to go.
Go Comedy to Leo. If you want good ones, come to me.
Oh, you comics are so horrible to each other. Anyway, this is we've come to the end of the show. We've come to the end of the barrel of Christmas songs, but this is Wizard. Yeah, I mean, this is the favourite one. This is the one. Yeah, I wish it could be Christmas every day. Merry Christmas, everyone. I'll see you after.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, I'll be back January 12th, and probably still drunk.